A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Whether you're a brand, large or small business, or an individual, you need customers or clients, and the chances are some of your potential customers are probably listening to this podcast right now. From history,
when Napoleon laid Boulogne for a year,
politics,
if that person is poor, it's a bad neighborhood, then you have the disproportionate police brutality, which is meted out instantly at people of color.
Culture.
Had they written it that Chris called an ambulance for Alice straight away, and we wouldn't have learned about the severity of alcohol withdrawal either. Well done to the writers. Thank you for making a wonderful podcast, but I'd give Rotherham a miss. Bye.
The Rotherham Tourist Board.
Geekdom.
The flag is a graphic symbol, not a verbal symbol. You know, why don't we just write France on the flag? I mean, we laugh when you think of putting a country's name on a flag.
Society or music.
Young people began to turn away from their parents' ethics and their style of dress, and they began to dance to a new type of music.
Roy Field Brown's podcasts are downloaded just under 100,000 times a month. So putting your message here could well be a wise investment. If you have something to hawk, sell, or promote, why not email royfield@gmail.com and hear your product or service promoted to up to 100,000 articulate listeners today.
This podcast is a Roy Field Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality ducky drama that are centered in Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the perfect romance, who is Roy Field Brown, and with me are the questionable dalliance, who is
Terry Warbis.
And this week's unfortunate coupling is
Peter Fickley.
And this week's Dumpty Dum is from someone who sent me that brass band rendition of Barrett Green some time ago, and me, because I was on Virtual DJ yesterday having a play around, and I thought, let's have a little bit of soft sell and let's mix it in. And it kind of went-ish, didn't it? I heard it all from you, didn't I, Auntie Kerry Warburton?
Well, Tainted Love is definitely one of my Desert Island discs. That's the first song I heard booming out of a pub when I very first went out drinking underage in Wakefield. I mean, it's a great track as well, but it has a poignancy to it as well.
Staggering around Wakefield with a gut full of snake bites, age 15.
Something like that.
It's also one of those songs where the cover is kind of better and well known than the original.
Yes.
And that's
a lot of people don't even realise there is an original, do they?
20 years' time, if no one will even know that it was anything but a Roy Field Brown classic. They'll be, you know, this will become the definitive version.
Folks, that's the lengths I've been dragged to. The fact that I had to remix and do my own Dumpty Dum, because that's it. There's none left. That's like, because of that, folks, I spent yesterday evening deep in a mix and I've put together a little something for you, which I'm going to put at the end of the show. All because you lazy bastards, none of you sent in a dum-de-dum.
Who sent in the brass band bit mixed up?
Whoever you are, you need to out yourself, because I got this about February of this year. That I know because it's on my machines. We have actually played it out. However, I looked through my emails. None of the emails say brass quartet Barrett Green. So you sent it through with a different subject matter, and I just couldn't find it because obviously there's like there's hundreds of emails sent through in February and January. So whoever you are, please email in, out yourself, so your name can be up there in lights. Mom or sir, and talking about mom or sir, oh my gosh, we've got news for you folks. This Friday at 4 p.m. and not 7, Jackie Smith, ex-Home Secretary, ex of Strictly, well, technically she's still on it, is going to be doing a Friday Zoom. She emailed me last night, UK time, and said the only time she can do anything before Christmas. So if you have a question about Strictly for our Jackie, Dum-de-dum is supreme. Just log on at 4 p.m. UK time this Friday. There'll be a Zoom. There'll be Jackie Smith. You'll talk about Strictly and a little bit about her love of the Archers. It's going to be a busy week in Dum-de-dum Towers. Auntie Kerry Warburton, we haven't even started the show and I feel like we've been right in it. If somebody would like to send us in a Dum-de-dum so I don't have to mix in Soft Cell with Barrett Green, how can that be done?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text message starting with Dum to 077 862 00690. Thanks to our social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and Shambridge for her voices. Plus, of course, Lucy B. Freeman.
On this week's episode, we hear views from Glyn, full of love, who's out and about, young Keith, who's on the top of a bus, hanging out with all the cool kids at the back, Quentin, silver-tongued Rainer, John from the Isle of Wight and also from Sweden, Red Agnes, Mandy Belshaw, she's back, and Pat from Leeds, Pete's favourite. And it's going to be a right royal show, folks. Just very quickly, before we go on, because I've got to say this stuff at the top end of the show, because otherwise I'll forget, because I'm a forgetful type of person. Dum-de-dum.com. I need you all to go on there. If you created an account some years ago, dust off your account. If you haven't, please put your location, and not that we need your absolute physical address, just put the town or the area of London or the area of the city where you live. Just put that in, because we've basically fixed Traktor. It's all kind of working. And we need the database to update itself. So I've looked at the big map and I can see that we have loads of people in London. And actually, that is the reason why Red Agnes sent us in a call, because you can now actually message through the app other dum-de-dummers. So go on there, dust off your profile, go and have a look, see who's on there. In the next week, we will unveil Traktor 2.0. You're saying to yourselves, don't want Traktor. What I want is Pete and Kerry to talk about the hot topic of the week. So, folks, right, and this week's hot topic is, what is David Archer being set up for? Auntie Kerry Warburton, you're all fighting fit, you're recuperating, you're on your mettle, go.
I am. Yeah, David is featuring quite a bit at the moment, isn't he? And what I'm enjoying most about this is that he's having quite a bit of self-doubt. We've realised he's like 61 years old. People are saying things about him such as, you know, he's one-dimensional. He even asked, was it Eddie? He said, do you think I'm one-dimensional? It's like, why? Has someone been saying something? It's like, oh, no, it's just inferred. He's having a bit of a reflective moment. And not too soon, really, in my books. Tracy also described him as being not a laugh a minute to Roman, and he truly discovered that was correct in the session where they were doing the two truths and a lie. Is he cruising for some sort of enlightenment? where he's going to grow as a person and realise that actually there's more to life than being a curmudgeon? Or is he cruising for a midlife crisis, late life crisis, three quarters life crisis? Don't know.
Or is he going to do a big David double down and just, you know, dig in even deeper,
but
become even more curmudgeonly and even more cantankerous? The other angle of attack on poor David's calm is that obviously Lizzie sort of threw down the gauntlet that, you know, oh, you know, you might say that Vince is a, you know, what was it that David called Vince?
A rat.
Yeah, a number of different names, actually, yes. And Lizzie said, yes, he might be all of those things, but he'd still sit down with you and have a chat. And so then David had to quickly sort of gather himself and, you know, admit that he would probably give it a go, although not change his opinion. So I think, yeah, that everything's pointing to David having some kind of existential crisis. And you've also got, you know, Eddie on manoeuvres, undoubtedly about to sort of suffer Stockholm syndrome and become one of the Nighthawkers and actually join forces with them to mount a full attack on Marnie. So that's going to be happening, I think, another one of my pet theories. I mean, we've been told off recently, Kerry, haven't we, for being too negative about David and various other characters.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is from the scriptwriters, you know, pens or keyboards. They have said, you know, in the mouths of other characters that David is, you know, one-dimensional, is a bit set in his ways. He had to come up with three stories and they were all about cows, or at least two were. So, you know, there's definitely sort of tea leaves that we're supposed to be reading. And I think it could be quite fun. I mean, you know, it's actually maybe it's been trailered for a bit longer than we think, because obviously Josh and Ben have been calling him Disco Dave, you know, quite a lot over the last few months and all through the monologue.
Yeah, I mean, he was very rude, wasn't he, to Roman about Roman and his acting career. Why did he say, oh, one episode of Casualty? No, he didn't get the Downton gig. It was just an audition.
Yeah.
What's going on? Why be like that? Oh, there's three of them in that room, Roman, himself and Oliver.
Roman's obviously a new character sort of on mic. It's also a bit weird for David to be bullying him. It's helping to position Roman for the audience, but also it's kind of like marking David out as being, I think it was quite spectacularly rude, especially when you've got Oliver being kind of puppishly enthusiastic.
Yes.
Kind of, and you know, his normally, I mean, I would find Oliver pretty frustrating to hang out with, I think, because that sort of relentless optimism would definitely jar with my sort of, you know, actually more David-esque personality, if I'm completely honest. Maybe that's why I dislike David so much, is because it's basically like some kind of horrible fictional mirror. But it was really egregious, the level of rudeness.
Yeah, he clearly didn't really enjoy sitting there, you know, and he kept asking, like, how long is this going to take? Is it going to take up the whole hour that we're doing this? Well, that was worth it at the end, he said. It could just be that he doesn't want to be there at all, and it's not really that personal against Roman, but he did make digs against his character and career, didn't he?
Well, if we've got the triangle, Kerry, you've got as the kind of like the charming Oliver character. We've got me as the curmudgeonly David. Let's hear from Roman. Royfield, what do you think? You know, you're the one with the sort of like the, you know, pro acting chops.
Hey, what pro acting chops do
you
I have?
You've got you can turn your hand to anything, can't you? You're a DJ one minute, you're a
creative
the next. You're a polymath. So what?
What I got from that scene was very similar to what you're saying, that David is fundamentally a one-dimensional, boring man. And what he couldn't understand was that Roman, not that Roman is new to acting, very obviously he isn't, but he's new to doing this. And actually, it's a way of him getting to know the people in the village, you know, Oliver and David. So this is quite a standard and, dare I say, slightly hackneyed way of loosening people up for something like this. And David didn't understand that. Not only that this is somewhat of a tried and tested way, as I said, for loosening people up in that type of environment, but also just for Roman getting to know who's going to be working with. And for David, as far as he's concerned, well, I've been doing the panto for years. We don't need to do this. Just give us a script and let's just get on with it type of thing. And it just goes to emphasise the smallness of David Archer's world. And I think when we kind of chatted about this slightly before we did the show, there was mention of David and the leather jacket, which was some point last year. And I think there is a problem with the older male characters in that they're in a grey area where they don't actually drive storylines. They react to storylines. Jim and the childhood abuse was a real case in point in that that is so unusual now that you go, blimey, no, I can only think of one older male character who's actually driven a storyline. Invariably, their partner dies. So you have the Oliver and Caroline thing, and then they have a storyline and they kind of react. It's the younger characters that actually drive storylines, and I would say the women. So the character of David is actually in this real grey area where he is the patriarch of Brookie and actually the patriarch of the whole kit and caboodle. Because Brookers, and we've said this so many times on the podcast, because Brookfield actually is the fulcrum of which the whole drama revolves around, nothing much really ever happens there, and it can't. And the very centre of Brookie is David, and it has to be this steady hand at the tiller. So, in a narrative perspective, he's boring. Number two, because strategically he has to be. Then number two, historically been a little bit of a slightly grey character. And then he's at this weird age where, you know, we're not going to believe David Archer running off and having an affair, are we? We just aren't going to believe it. And then what else can he do? He's not going to make a rash decision and sell the farm, because then it's not the Archers anymore. So on the one hand, I have a certain amount of sympathy for him strategically, but he is bloody boring. And then what do we have the other side of that coin? Then is Kenton, you know, who is the real Disco Dave, and he's a pantomime figure. So I don't know. I've whittled on for about 3 minutes and I haven't really said anything. So.
You have. I was just thinking about older male characters who have driven plots, and Matt Crawford and Philip Moss sprang to mind. And then I was thinking...
But they're not core, though, are they?
They're not core, no. Yeah, that's true. But then I was thinking Mince Casey is about to step in as a driver. He's not core, but he's attached to a core, isn't he?
Yeah, he's glorious. And that's going to be fantastic. That I hope that they end up having a kind of grudging friendship. I mean, Lizzie forces them to get together. I mean, one of the things I see in myself that through David is a kind of a naivety. David sees the world in kind of moral absolutes. So Vince Casey's evil because he's moving the. He's moving the abattoir from here to here, and it's not useful for his small group of farmers. And he doesn't ever have that kind of helicopter view. Like Royfield said, his world is very small, and all perspectives kind of are through that limited aperture. And actually, I think when he sits down with Vince, Vince is going to be one of these multiple plot devices that show to David, you know, just how parochial and kind of like limited his world is. And I think maybe, you know, he might have not a midlife crisis, but like a little moment of reflection, and actually he might put down the leather jacket and go out and buy himself a nice kind of like tweed overcoat or something.
Yeah, and just be joyful about the things that there are to be joyful about in his small world.
Let's have a little touch of this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
And let's start with Glyn Fullerlove.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here, on location again. I had hoped, given that pigs featured quite heavily in the Archers last week, to be able to send you a photograph of pigs. But the pigs seem to be more sensible than me and seem to have gone inside somewhere today. So you may just get a picture of pig arcs on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group page, unless I can find an archive picture I've got of the same pigs. Sticking with pigs and with Rex. So last week, the farm fairy may have turned up trumps for Rex with this council farm that he may be putting in a bid for. And I'm wondering whether that will provide a storyline where he and Pip get together on the basis that Pip, feeling a little bit guilty of what's happened at Hollow Tree, volunteers to help Rex put his business plan together, as a result of that, they become quite close. And then Pip actually realizes that if she teams up with Rex, in more ways than one, then she would have almost her own farm to run, or to run in conjunction with Rex, rather than just being a worker effectively on her parents' farm. And I wonder if that would then also, she might think that provides a stable home for her and Rosie going forward. And maybe Toby will take his riches from selling Scruff Gin and head off to Brighton or somewhere. Okay, well, those are my thoughts on last week's Archers. I hope everyone in Dumpty Dum Land is staying well and safe. And thank you to the team for the podcast as ever. And speak to you again soon. Bye.
Ooh, yes, the council farm thing was interesting, wasn't it? It did kind of pop up as if a fairy had provided it out of nowhere for Rex's future.
It does feel like there's been so many plots in the past where a council farm would have been something people would have been going for, like Ed.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it just seemed weird that all of a sudden we were only just finding out about council farms. But fair enough. And I mean, that's perfectly reasonable. But yeah, certainly that's something I'd never heard of before.
And on the Pip front, you know, if that does all pan out, that he does get the council farm and has his own business, and will that then enamour Pip towards him? I was thinking about Rex and Kirsty possibly getting together when I was listening this week, obviously a bit further down the line.
Would they create a kind of worthiness black hole, just sucking everything else into them?
Probably.
Just, you know, just that... How unbelievably pleasant and good could they be to the world?
Yes, you have got a point, but I do think they're quite well suited.
Yeah, and why shouldn't they? They both deserve a bit of luck romantically. I mean, so I was just thinking with them, it would be Pex or Rep or Rexipa maybe for Pip and Rex. Yeah, again, I don't want to be negative. I just don't feel like Pip deserves Rex.
No, I don't.
She's had her chance several times with him, and I think it would be a bitter pill to swallow as a listener to hear, you know, poor Rex throwing his life away.
Could we have, in one small village, two uncles bringing up their nephew / niece as their own child? You know, that'd just be too much, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Good. So that can't happen.
I think I've said it before about Rex and Emma. I think they're both due some good luck, and I think they're due some success. I think the script writers must sort of instinctively understand that there's only so much that we as listeners can stomach of certain characters absorbing all the bad luck and all of the abuse.
Did you mean Emma then, or did you mean Kirsty?
Oh, I meant Emma, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Oh, and Kirsty as well. I think the three of them have to stop being the sole repositories for everything bad that happens to people in the village.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there is Helen as well, and, you know, a few other people.
My heart did sink a little when Glyn said that Pip might think, ooh, there's a nice farm future for myself, as being a reason to get with someone. I don't like that.
And dare I say, if you are basically the heir apparent or the heir presumptive to Brookers, a little council farm is absolutely no substitute. You're going to look down your nose at that, aren't you?
Yeah. What only seven? What was it? 7 years? Only 7 years of security. I mean, so what would your equivalent be, Kerry? I mean, if I told you that I had a friend who was a butcher, would you sort of be like, oh yes, yeah,
yeah?
Maybe he would be right up the list. Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you what, he'd have a lot of lamb he could put in your pocket. Yeah. I tell you.
I'd have to get bigger pockets.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, as I was saying that, I was like, yeah, this is going to get a yes. Kerry won't even hesitate. She's probably even slightly disappointed it's only a sort of a fictional.
Yeah, I'd quite like Rex for myself. Thank you.
Yeah,
all those
Rex
pigs.
The butcher. Yeah.
Mm.
Regardless of the fact that, yes, what was the phrase? The farm fairy. It's a very neat plot device, but you know, all the better. Rex deserves it. If he's going to be the beneficiary of some kind of mystical Ambridge based benefactor, then all the better.
And also, before we move on, wasn't Neil lovely?
Oh yes, someone said on Twitter, didn't they, how lovely it was to have Neil's calming voice in our ears.
And he was really encouraging him and sort of going over the pitfalls that he's had to deal with in the past, but you know, look where I am now and you'll come good. He was really, he was wonderful, wasn't he? Very encouraging.
And with precisely zero personal gain or benefit.
Yep.
Rex isn't a family member, isn't going out mm-hmm. with any of his children.
Yeah.
He's turned down multiple opportunities to be involved professionally. So, yeah.
Real empathy there. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah.
And he even said nice things about Hannah.
He did. He said she's calmed down.
Yeah. Now that she's got what she wants.
Mm. Well, there you go. Neil Carter, saint. Mr. Perfect in Ambridge, the Bill Roenger we all love. Now, that's Glyn. Thank you for starting off proceedings, Glyn. Now we're going on to young Keith, who's on the top deck of the bus, hanging out with all the cool kids.
Young Keith here in a very dark and dingy morning in northeast London. And just a quick one, really, as per, I suppose they're always quick, aren't they? It's 2 minutes maximum. I haven't actually listened to the Archers yet this week, but I was on the bus yesterday and I did sort of overhear stroke eavesdrop on a conversation that an elderly lady was having with her friend when she was bemoaning the Archers. And she was sort of going, oh, it's too many storylines. I was nodding away to that. And she goes, it's not really true to life. And I thought, okay, don't know. So, someone should die from COVID, really. and cackled. And I like that bit. But then she said, oh, it's basically just the same as EastEnders or Coronation Street these days. It's stupid. And I thought, oh, either I've not watched EastEnders recently enough and things have got really quite boring on there, or I'm not understanding a lot of the subtext on the Archers. I mean, there is an alcoholic, I will admit. But other than that, is it really on par with those? I don't know. But I enjoyed that nonetheless. Anyway, I'm going to listen now. And I hope that I won't bother you with any more thoughts, but have a fantastic week. Keep up the good work. Thank you. Goodbye. Actually, hi, me again. I've just been thinking, I do bloody agree with that woman about things not being true to life on the Archers. I felt I should have turned around and said to her, people eating bloody out-of-season blueberries on that show, lovey-dovey. You don't know the half of it.
He's obsessed with blueberries.
Yeah.
I was replying to the first bit and I said I haven't listened to watched EastEnders or Coronation Street for years and years, so I don't have a clue really about how like the Archers they are, or vice versa. Do either of you watch those?
It's not my cup of tea. I don't think I've ever watched a televisual soap opera. I can imagine Royfield tucking into a bit of Coronation Street or
I grew up on that stuff at my mother's knee, so... A bit of Betty Turpin, Ina Sharples in the 70s on Corrie.
Yeah.
And then, as is well documented on this podcast, I very much remember the first episode of EastEnders with Reg Cox was found dead by Ali from, the taxi driver from Ozcabs. but I gave up on EastEnders. I just couldn't do with the relentless plastic gangsters and... the various fights at the Vic around about 2004. And then I soldiered on with Corrie for about another 18 months, 2 years maybe. But I've given up on that stuff too, because I used to love about Corrie was just the fact that there was so much humour in it.
Yeah.
And also, it's kind of one of the things which I say that I love about the Archers, which feels somewhat kind of contradictory, but I do like it when not much happens in the Archers. And I liked it when not much happened in Corrie, but they judged it up in the 2000s and it was explosions every other week, the tram falling off into the street, all this kind of nonsense. And I went, I need a quieter life. So I just decided just to hunker down with the Archers, basically.
Mm.
So, I haven't watched Corrie in about 15 years. So that's me done with it.
My very lovely brother-in-law watches Korean soap operas. He's a very respected and successful Australian gentleman. I think I would guess in his late 50s, early 60s. And yes, but I think it's exactly what you're saying, Royfield. There's no opportunity of any stress. It's just preposterously sort of good-looking people sort of engaging in mundane romantic activities.
So if you... dear listener, have a Korean soap that you're into. Speak, pipe in next week. Other than that, and K-pop, culturally,
don't say it. Are you going to call Korea the Southampton of Asia?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
South Korea is the home of StarCraft, the greatest computer game that's ever been made. I used to watch competitive computer games. I used to pay a subscription to watch it with my cousins. This is the level of geekery that we're talking about.
Blimey.
Well, I don't expect anyone to understand or to approve.
Well, that's just a perfect way to segue into Jenny from Southampton.
Hello, esteemed Kerry co-host, Positive Peter, Dumpty Dummers Everywhere, and Royfield.
Yes.
It's Jenny from Southampton. After my call last week, you asked for three things about Southampton that prove it has a cultural footprint. Number one, Titanic. The Titanic sailed from Southampton in 1912 and left hundreds of Sutonian families, yes, that's what you call them, bereft of the family members that went with it. Number two, Southampton was a Georgian spa town and short-term home to Jane Austen. Number three, in more modern times, it has a whole load of cultural places to visit, from Tudor House in the Old Town to the Mayflower Theatre, Sea City Museum, and a very good art gallery. So there, more than three things. And although I take your point that it might take a local to know most of those things, come on, everyone knows about Titanic. On to the arches. I was a bit dismayed last week when Royfield, yes, you again, suggested that to fit the morality play structure, Alice needed to get her comeuppance. She's not immoral, she's ill. She might not be a very nice person sometimes, but I think that's completely separate. Just like he didn't need to like Helen to root for her, I don't think we need to like Alice to want her suffering to end. It was cruel of her not to give Chris permission to tell Emma, though. Emma deserves an apology and Chris needs someone to confide in. And I wonder if it'll somehow end up being Gavin, as he already knows. Anyway, have a lovely weekend all and stay safe.
Yes, Royfield.
That was about the best 2 minutes of my life. Absolutely wonderful. Yep. I feel like we should start a sub-podcast that's like the Frasier to the Cheers that is Dumpty Dum, which is just Royfield being told off by Jen. I adored it. Anyway, Royfield, what do you have to say for yourself?
Well, okay, number one, I think, first off, Jenny from Southampton, wonderful to hear from you. You did kind of make my point for me.
Oh, my God.
Didn't you? And you actually did say that. You said, yes, you have to be from Southampton to know them. Even down to the fact that we don't even know what somebody from Southampton is even called outside of Southampton. There isn't a colloquial name for them which has any resonance within the UK. There is that. When it comes down to Titanic, I take that to a small degree, but Southampton is only known for people leaving the city is what you're saying. And people from Belfast also claim a bit of Titanic-ness because the Titanic left Southampton, went to Belfast before then it ventured into the northern Atlantic and then hit an iceberg. So, you know, you speak to people from Belfast and they kind of claim the Titanic as well. So, again, pretty slim pickings, really. So basically, you've agreed with me. Now, on the morality play thing, I think, let's say that I said that somewhat inelegantly. What I meant was there has to be some level of consequence because part of the remit of the BBC is to educate, inform, and whatever the other one is. So this isn't just a great plot device. Also, it's a health message.
You did say all of that last week. I don't think it was inelegant of you. I think it was really simplistic, which is what I said last week. And I agree with Jenny. She's not immoral. She's ill. And Jenny's correct, and so am I. It's not as difficult as you made out. I think, you know, yeah, of course there are going to be consequences. As Peter said last week, you know, she's already suffering. She wasn't enjoying herself in the bathroom. And she's not a bad person. We don't have to like her. And we didn't like, well, I certainly didn't like Helen before any of that happened to her. But I could properly sort of sympathise with her situation. And I just think she nailed it. Alice isn't immoral. She is ill. She has an illness. And I feel for her for having that.
Don't think I said she was actually immoral, though.
Well, you really, in really bold terms, that, you know, if you do something wrong, there's got to be a comeuppance. But you said there's good and there's bad. And basically, I was saying she isn't at either end of those things. There's more nuance to it because of her being ill.
But I did also somewhat slightly pass the buck by saying the morality police, of which I would never say that I was part of the morality police. And I didn't say that something bad needs to happen to her, but particularly, but I appreciate that people could have thought that that's actually what I was saying and believing. We couldn't be further from the truth, but, you know.
I thought that they've written it very well this week, because I've been on a bit of a roller coaster like we all have with Alice. You started off sort of maybe viewing her as this shallow binge drinker. Then, you know, the full depth of her alcoholism has revealed itself. And then you'd have to be fairly hard-hearted not to be sympathetic with her situation, sort of the agonies over the, you know, how she was failing her unborn baby. And then this week we got, you know, Alice the entitled princess again. And I think they're doing a good job of sort of allowing you to experience that nuance of feeling sympathy and empathy, and at the same time they're going, for God's sake, you selfish cow, you know, just you've been given some help here, be grateful, you know. And I can't remember who it was, someone on Twitter, definitely a friend of the program, said you know, she called out that she was doing it for Chris. She says, oh, I'm going to do this for you, she should be going there for herself. She shouldn't be viewing it as an altruistic gesture to be going into rehab. And then also, of course, sorry, very quickly, not allowing Chris the release of talking to his own sister and unburdening his guilt.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she's not a nice person, Alice. We've heard her be horrible. Some of that was driven by the alcohol.
Yeah.
And some of it was driven by the reasons why she's drinking, which is that she probably isn't that keen on herself, to be honest with you.
I had a thought about that this afternoon, Kerry, just after we spoke. Royfield, we had one of our traitor chats this afternoon. I was thinking about people who have drinking problems. And I, you know, I've said before, I've had my flirtation with some problems with booze. I've never had to choose between paying for booze and any toll that any of my friends or any of my family have paid for me drinking has been dealing with my behavior, you know. And Alice doesn't have that excuse. Her unpleasantness, she's always able to afford her booze. It's not like she's it's not like she's having to choose between shoes for her children and a drink in the pub. That's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of cliche, isn't it? The person whose childhood was ruined because the father spent all their rent money. Your sympathy for her really does run out quite quickly when she starts being unpleasant to Chris or unpleasant to other people. He's just sunk them into enormous debt in order to sort of cover up her embarrassment. No other reason. Her parents could pay for it easily.
And all of that, you know, how can you abandon me? I thought you loved me, saying that to Chris. Yeah. And bless Chris for saying, you know, I'm totally out of my depth here. I was so glad that he said that. You know, we need expert help here. And then he had to actually say, do you love me? Then do it for me. It was him who kind of pushed that to switch it up.
Yeah. Play devil's advocate. Are we being unfair on Alice that calling her out for using love as a emotional blackmail and not Chris? Or do you think the fact that he is trying to help her or trying to get her into a position to seek help makes it kind of fair play?
I think he was sort of batting it back, really. He's had that thrown at him a lot.
Yeah.
And he was just like, hang on a minute. No, it's, you know, think of it a different way. And her thinking that in 2 weeks, everything is going to be back to normal. Oh, my God.
Well, Witherspoon said, and someone else said online, about how this is just the warm-up act. This is just the detox. The rehab will be happening afterwards. Because I think, didn't I, last week I said, oh, you know, it's a very short amount of time.
Mm.
But actually, no, this is just the start of things, I think. Yeah. So, yes, she's very naive if she thinks this.
She is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see how she can do it without her family's help. I just don't think it's possible.
Me neither. And I get that the shame. It's funny because I tweeted, I said, you know, it is a shame she feels, and you know, that she can't tell her family, and actually it is shame that means she can't, kind of thing. So, but to be able to do that is going to help her massively. And I get that at this point in time that's not at the forefront of her mind. She just doesn't want anyone to know about this awful situation, but it's definitely got to happen.
It's only awful because she's been horrible to people.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she does feel the shame of it, doesn't she? She doesn't want to.
Sorry, drinking during pregnancy as well. I was forgetting about that.
Yeah.
I know it's front and centre, but I was thinking about it from a very, you know, very specific point of view. But yeah.
Yeah, and I do think, as you mentioned, the denying Chris the opportunity to have someone to speak to about it when she's off at this detox place is a dreadful thing for her, especially Emma. And I know, again, it's her pride, isn't it? She doesn't want Emma to be right. But surely Chris has to be afforded the opportunity to build back that relationship with his sister, who actually was right.
Yeah. Way back when we first were doing the podcast together, and the this plot line kind of was just starting, I gave my very strongly held belief that alcohol doesn't have a personality. It reveals, it reveals the truths that we sometimes hide underneath. It exaggerates maybe, but you know, fundamentally, that, you know, you don't suddenly become a monster because you've had a drink. It just shows that part of you. And I think we've had, you know, so if Alice is embarrassed of her behaviour, she's embarrassed of herself.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, it's not. And I hope that, you know, as she has this therapy, it is an opportunity for her to become a better person. Because, yeah, but, you know, this week I think we saw a bit of the unpleasantness and a bit of the selfishness that sort of drives a lot of her behaviour in her treatment of Ed, her treatment of Emma, and now Chris.
Yep.
That's Alice and her psyche and her lack of any kind of moral niceness kind of just about dealt with and dealt and exposed there.
Carrie, you'd think he'd learn his lesson, wouldn't you? Hosts.
No, I wouldn't. I've experienced him for too long now.
Oh dear. Right. Well, no, I thought let's make this into a positive. It's commendable that you can field a whole load of criticism quite elegantly, I will admit, about being so bold with your statements, and then there you go again. I mean, it shows an incredible amount of chutzpah.
Oh no,
that's a good word.
Thick-skinned me, sir, right? And all you know, half of what I say is just to solicit a response from either the listeners or from my co-hosts, and I think that you pair have really elegantly and expertly dealt with Alice and the unpleasantness, which is at her core, and the moral blankness. And I now think it's time to move on to John from Sweden and the Isle of Wight.
All right, Dumpty Dummers, it's John from the Isle of Wight from Sweden here. Just want to say, I think both the Archers and Dumpty Dum have really picked it up a level, and it's almost better than ever at the moment. Maybe we were a bit starved during the monologue period. Not from your side. I'm not saying Dumpty Dum was suffering during that. I'm saying the Archers was substandard. Dumpty Dum has always held a high, high level. But now the Archers is back to normal. It just seems better than ever in my mind. I absolutely love it. I've hit the sweet spot with listening. I save the omnibus until Dumpty Dum comes out. And I listen to them back to back, which is perfect because I don't need to make up my own mind. I don't have to think. Don't have to form any opinions. Dumpty Dum just tells me exactly how things are in the world of Archers. I'm such a big fan and I love it so much. Thanks for everything you do. Cheers, guys.
OMG. That was lovely, wasn't it? John in the Isle of Wight. He's in tier one in my books. literally, he's one of the three places in the UK, isn't he, that's in tier one.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, Isle of Wight, Cornwall, and, what's the third one? Don't know, but the Isle of Wight is one of them.
That was very nice. And maybe how I should listen to the Archers from now on is, the weeks that we aren't doing it, Kerry.
Yeah.
I should wait to hear what Philippa and Quentin and Rosie have to say about things so that I don't have to, I can save myself the agony of forming opinions.
Yeah. Yeah. Not having to think does have its appeal at times, doesn't it?
Although, yeah, I just as soon as you said that, I realised that does suggest that any thought process goes into our warblings at all, you know.
Yeah. True.
But I mean, maybe it is a kind of juxtaposition from the, with the monologues. But I was very public about enjoying the monologues. I just think the Archers has been good recently. Just very. Quentin was a bit worried last week about just how brutal the shower scene was with Alice. But apart from maybe some rough edges like that, if that's a bit distasteful to you, I do think the level of writing, the kind of how rounded out the characters, the general blend of fun and serious plot lines has been done very, very well.
Yeah, it has really hit form, hasn't it? I'm really, really keen for it to get back to the full set of episodes. And I did see on Twitter that Kerry Davis, he was quite active on Twitter, wasn't he, over the weekend? Yeah. He replied to people that it's actually still going to take quite a long time. He did say next year, but he was being very vague, and he did say a long time. So I don't think it's going to be in the first part of next year at all. But it's a shame, isn't it? Because I'd love to have these episodes that are now happening to be fleshed out a little more each week.
Now that we're used to them, is maybe a Sunday monologue, because I think Royfield said in the past, and I've definitely said in the past, that the Sunday episodes had a more kind of they didn't do much kind of big plot exposition on a Sunday. So maybe they could just do a little kind of monologue every Sunday, just to give us that little bit of extra content. I know that my suspicion is that Royfield will think that's a terrible idea, but I'd be curious.
When are we ever going to hear about how Ambridge are doing in the cricket if there's monologues on a Sunday? It's just like, no.
Just a low-impact way of them being able to predictably give some extra content. I have been missing the a Friday or a Sunday, and maybe that would be a sort of little, what's the cliche, a bit of methadone instead of the full heroine of a cricket episode. I know the visceral excitement of hearing them go toe-to-toe with Darrington.
I quite enjoyed those Sunday ones that were sort of something and nothing, but just tidied you over.
Sort of gentle stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, a little bit of a set me up for the Monday. The third place in Tier 1, by the way, is the Scilly Isles, I've just remembered.
Look at that multitasking, Kerry.
Yeah. No, I remembered it.
Oh, okay.
See, remember that, but I can't remember what's happening in the arches.
I was judging you by my own shoddy standards, so I just assumed you must have had to have Googled it. Yeah.
I knew it was a sort of obscure... it's not an obscure place, but you know.
I mean, they've obviously just chucked a couple in so that there is actually three tiers. Anyway, sorry, that's off topic.
Maybe.
I wonder if we have any listeners in the Eyes of Scilly.
We can look on Tractor.
Can I shame myself and admit that are they the ones that are off the coast of Cornwall?
Yes.
They are. Okay. I'm still ashamed because I didn't know for certain, but not ashamed as I was.
With the lovely benign climate.
Is it the one where you're not allowed to use cars and it's all golf carts and horses?
My gut is to say yes, because I think they're so small, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
I could be getting mixed up with the Channel Islands and like Alderney or something or another. But all I know is that it's subtropical, it's super lovely and warm, and yes, it's off the coast of Cornwall.
Oh.
Other than that, cultural footprint's kind of lost on me, really. But anyway, we're retreading old ground, folks, and we don't really want to do that. So John from the Isle of Wight /Sweden, you're going to have to explain the Sweden bit for us, John, but thank you for calling in. Now, it's Red Agnes, we're going up north.
Hiya, Royfield and your naughty chums and dumpty dummers all around the world and space. It's Red Agnes here from grim up north. It's feeling pretty grim up north at the moment. Fortunate for me, I get out and about to meet people, count how many toes they've got and how many legs they've got. Unfortunately, Mr. Agnes is trapped for 10 hours a day in our tiniest bedroom running virtual courses. He used to get out and about and eat meals in nice restaurants and what have you, and now he gets a tin of soup a day. Poor sausage. It was interesting to hear the comment last week about the man who said, why are you always horrible to all the characters and why do you listen? Well, in that part of it, I was always taught it was nice to be nice with real people, but it's delicious to be horrible to fictitious ones. I'm smiley nice to probably about 20 people a day, so I listen to the Archers so I can be bloody horrible to all of them. And to be honest, most of them deserve it. See you soon. Yes. Bye-bye.
Yes. Yes, she's right, isn't she, Red Agnes?
Well, I'm not saying that means we're right, but it pretty much does.
She's right. Yeah.
She's right, so therefore we're right.
You can be beautifully lovely to real, actual people. You know, even I am.
I can testify, yes.
But yeah, and, you know, the little added bit that she said at the end there was that most of them deserve it. So, you know, I've written that down.
Yeah. That said, I do appreciate that an unrelenting wall of negativity might be a difficult listen. And I have taken that feedback on board. Just a sort of the tap left running from our bile ducts might be a bit sort of unpalatable. Yeah.
I don't think it is unrelenting because we do like some of the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's my love of Vince is almost unbroadcastable. Yeah,
Joy, yeah. Neil,
Emma, lovely Emma, and it's not a sexual thing. I don't fancy Emma. I just want good things to happen to her. But I don't think I fancy a single one of them.
Mm. The next call is Quentin Rayner.
Hello again, fellow addicts. This is Quentin Rayner. Well, I've been a pig in muck this week, what with Neil being back on the scene, reassuringly giving Rex really helpful and kind advice about what to do with his swine after those swines, the archers, turf him out. And who knew council farms existed before this episode? I certainly didn't. And in fact, I tweeted about this and very knowledgeable people replied that they're still available, but somewhat rare. Now, like Kerry, I'm detecting that the Nighthawkers storyline is another infuriating distraction the scriptwriters have dug up, on a par, I fear, with the Naughty Milkman. But at least we get to hear from Eddie again, and of course Will. My thanks to Mia Fox, who told us on the Dumpty Dum website that Celia Imrie's son, Angus Imrie, who plays Josh Archer, also plays Prince Edward in the current series of The Crown. And I once interviewed HRH, so there's a shameless piece of name-dropping for you to groan about. Mm. Finally, a bit of feedback for Peter, whose tweet about Alice's bathroom meltdown was quoted on Feedback, no less, last week, and who celebrated his own 46th birthday on Sunday by sleeping through the tweet-along. That's dedication for you. Anyway, I hope my riveting contribution hasn't sent him back into a slumber. Toodle-pip.
Well done, Quentin, on outing Peter's birthday.
Oh, yes, birthday Peter, yeah. Quentin was saying about having interviewed an HRH. My dad taught Princess Margaret to ice skate. No, not Margaret, Anne.
Ah.
Yeah, at the Sarajevo Winter Olympics, where he was doing stuff. So that
good
was,
heavens.
So, yeah. Quentin has actual contact with the royal family, but, you know, I'm sort of tangential.
Do you think your dad has watched The Crown, Peter?
No, it's not his cup of tea. He's watch other people live a life when he could be busy doing his. Outrageous.
Yeah, you did sleep through the tweet along, didn't you, on your birthday?
It was glorious. It was one of the best things. So, obviously, we all love our children. We've been boring about that in the past. But because I'm a new father, I didn't realise how wonderful your children being ill could be. So my wee boy was up for about an hour in the night time, and we got rewarded the next day. I didn't get out of bed till 11:30. It was one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me.
Yes, they're very precious, those lions, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean it's the I think the second one in 2 years, so just golly. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday, Peter.
Thank you. Yes, 46.
Can I just ask the pair of you a question? Because this came up around the dinner table yesterday when I was bemoaning the fact there were no dum-de-dums and I was going to have to, you know, craft one with my own fair hands and my own fair laptop. And I went, right, let's go 80s, let's go soft sell, let's see if we can work that in. And people of a certain age will go, hey, I know what you're doing there. Mm. And the doom, doom comes in and you did exactly that. Mm. Now, I was trying to think of 80s bands and I went Blancmange. And I went, know the name, couldn't think of one Blancmange
Living
song.
On the Ceiling is one of them. I used to dance to Blancmange in Raffles Nightclub in Wakefield. They're
going
very
back
good.
To Wakefield again.
Yep.
Just think if Phil Oakey had been in your nightclub instead of one in Sheffield, it could have been you.
Yeah.
Up there, singing away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It could. I was in a band, as you know, but not the Human League.
Have you
he's a bit older than me.
But the singers weren't, though. There would have been about your age, because they're only like 2 or 3 years older than me, as I seem to remember. That was the whole thing. When we were at school, like all the girls were like, oh, that literally could have been me, because they were Human League, I must have been about 13 Human League. They were like 17 or something. So we're in just about touching distance.
Wham, you know. Pepsi and Shirley, the same thing. Who did Pass the Duchy?
Musical Youth.
Musical Youth. They were literally being pulled out of school to go to Top of the Pops, famously, weren't they?
And I spoke to Dennis Seaton, the lead singer, and they didn't tell anybody at school that they were going to be on Top of the Pops.
Ooh. Blimey. Phil Oakey's 65. He's 10 years older than me. I knew he was a lot older.
But it was the girls, though.
This was in the good old days, Kerry, where a man in his 30s go trawling in clubs to sort of find some impressionable teenagers to pop on the tops of the pops.
Oh, one of them is 57, Suzanne. The other one is 58. Yeah.
I mean, I'm only, as we know, 46, and I used to, there was a nightclub in my town that basically everyone knew to avoid because it was all young girls and much older men.
Did it have a goodly terrible name?
No, the one in Cambridge was called Cinderella Rockefellers, and then the one in Newmarket was called De Niro's, but I can't remember what the one in Ely was. Yeah.
Other Blancmange hits, Don't Tell Me. Do you remember that?
No.
Yes, you do. Blind Vision.
People will be expecting us to play out Blancmange, and I'm not. I want to play out my own little mix, which I did with Bob Marley and Jammin'. But maybe there'll be a soft bed of Blancmange underneath this as we talk. Right, so that is 80s music covered. It's a soft bed of Blancmange, aiding your aural pleasure. Now it's Pat from Leeds. It's Peter's favourite.
Hello there, everyone in Dumpty Dumland. It's Pat from Leeds here. Well, we've learned some things on The Archers this week, haven't we? We've learned that Oliver knows how to mount a penny farthing. We know that David hasn't even got one dimension because his cow exploded and destroyed his dimension. We know about council farms, which I'd never heard of. So that was all very interesting. But I suppose mainly everybody's thinking about Alice and Chris. It has been horrible, a horrible experience, Alice, and for Chris. I do feel sorry for them both, but just when she was about to go into the rehab place, Chris asked if he could tell Emma and said, because he'd said some horrible things to her. And then Alice said, well, she deserved it. And I thought, oh, no, Alice, don't say that. Is she really that horrible, or is it just because she's in such a state? I don't really know if it's strong enough to be a plot prediction, but I know we're all, I think we're hoping that Emma will turn out to be a good support for both of them. Emma and Ed, actually, because Ed has had his own addiction issue. So I'm really hoping that that will turn out to be a really nice relationship, that Emma and Ed will support Alice and Chris. But I suppose it's much better for the drama point of view if they'd keep it a secret. In real life, I think that's unwise. I know it is real, but you know what I mean. Anyway, I'm sure I've been rambling on, so I'll say goodbye to everybody and stay safe and love to you all. Bye.
Love to you, Pat, too. Yeah, I did say about the Emma and Alice bonding thing quite a while ago on Twitter and on here. And on Twitter, I got kind of laughed off the park. But I think people are coming round to it now as being a possibility, and I really, really, really hope that that does happen. What do you two think about the likelihood of that?
I think it's the cliche where your life really does hit the skids and you find out who your friends are and they're not necessarily the people. And I know that Emma has said very clearly she doesn't like Alice, but I also don't think Emma's someone to particularly, you know, in a very good way, sort of be sort of stick to an opinion unnecessarily. And I think she would do the right thing. And also, Emma, we did have the scene where Ed tried to say to Alice, he did it twice, once when she was tipsy and once when she was absolutely smashed, where he basically said, I'm here for you, I'll support you, you know, you can talk to me anytime. And obviously, because it's Ed, you know that hasn't gone away. And he's also, Emma and him have a strong enough relationship where he'll support Alice even if it pisses Emma off.
Yeah, I think that is definitely going to be the case. I don't know how Chris will cope with that, but...
You know, I've been saying, I was last week, I was quite smug in saying that, oh, hey, look, Alice and Chris, their relationship does have some, you know, there is something there. People were wrong to suggest it was, you know, it was going to collapse under all this strain. But I might go back on that opinion a little bit, because if Alice is going to basically put Chris in a situation where he's got to sort of compromise his life and sort of, so if he's got to be forced to treat other people badly in order to protect his wife's, you know, ego, I think that that could put a significant strain on them. And that might be more difficult than supporting her through. Whereas actually being forced to do something wrong by someone else really is quite difficult.
Yeah.
And also, while I've got a moment, how hilarious is Pat? Pat packs more comedy into a couple of little dry asides than we do into about 2 hours of recording.
I love to. David's not even got one dimension because his exactly. cow exploded and ruined it. That's so funny. Yes, she's brilliant. Please ring all the time, Pat.
Pat, you have enlivened our goings on here. And as Kerry says, please keep calling in. Now, Auntie Kerry Warburton.
Yes.
Do we have any he-mails with an H?
We do. We have one he-mail and we have another thing that you sent me from somewhere else, wasn't it? Anyway, I'll do the he-mail first. This is from Helen. And she says, hello, Royfield and Dumpty Dummers, long time listener, first time caller in a of the not caller in a email of the vintage Emma, Will, Ed love triangle here. I'm interested to hear the positive response to the storyline of Alice and the revelation of her alcoholism, as I really disagree. Wonderful acting, and I don't want to take away from that, but as a spouse of an alcoholic, I found the whole scene unbelievable. Overdramatic, and it made me cringe. Although every experience is different, and I'm sure these dramatic situations happen, I think it risks reducing the portrayal of this issue to one of high drama instead of the mundanity and secretiveness that many alcoholics and their families live with. I don't think the writers gave us misdirection on how much Alice was drinking. I think it was an accidental omission rather than intentional. They could have built that understanding and secretiveness of her drinking much better as a long-term storyline. Very, very pleased to hear such an important issue getting airtime, but less over-dramatisation, please, and more exploration of the day-to-day mundanities of how she and Chris deal with her addiction. Thanks. Mmm.
That was exactly my opinion when I first heard it. I couldn't put it better. That was exactly how I felt. I was irritated by how dramatic it was. Mm. And part of that came out of the fact that it was so different to my experience. And so I actually took the time, and I hinted at this last week, to reach out to a few people. I researched the Alice, how she would be dealt with in terms of rehab by talking to my friend, the social worker. But I also reached out to a few people who had drinking problems to ask them about whether they thought it was realistic. And one person in particular said that was it was quite true to their experience, which doesn't discount the fact that by going so big with the alcoholism story, with the full DTs, with the kind of almost with a spoon, will correct this, but almost like a psychotic episode in the bathroom, they are leaning into the more dramatic side of the multiple different faces of alcoholism. I don't disagree, but I have heard from people who say that it was true to their experience. But also, I do think they went too big on it. If they're from a kind of public health point of view,
it has been a long term issue for her, hasn't it? As we have discussed before, there have been signs of it, you know, where she got drunk at a funeral and hiding the whiskey, and on we've gone with her sort of showing herself up in various situations and being secretive. So it has been long term in that regard. However, we did talk about this last week about how it seemed to just very, very suddenly and violently ramp right up to that very highly dramatized scene in the bathroom. I don't have enough experience to know this is the problem. I think the fact that she's pregnant and not an alcoholic on her own without being pregnant is going to surely heighten everything, is it not?
That was part of my concern, was that the message is this level of drinking is what is the relevance to alcohol fetal syndrome. Mm. And I think from a public health point of view, she shouldn't be drinking so heavily. So they should almost split the two plot, you know, split it into two.
Okay.
I'm only looking from a public health point of view. I'm not looking at it from a dramatic point of view at all. So let's talk about that level of drinking and let's talk about drinking during pregnancy. But but muddying the waters with the two, I think, sends out a series of mixed messages.
And going back to Quentin's call as well, because he mentioned the feedback piece, and I know you listened to it, Peter, because you actually featured in it, even though your own voice didn't feature in it.
No, I had the option. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And they touched on this too, didn't they? Because there were some tweets read out and then there were two women talking about whether they felt that this handling of the situation was over the top or did it sit well within the archers or what. And I think both of them from memory did feel that it had gone a little too extreme.
Didn't actually listen to it because
Not? Okay.
No, because you and Rosie had both listened to it, and so I just read what you'd taken from it. I didn't feel like I needed my own opinion. Yeah,
it's quite brief. It's a tiny portion of the feedback program.
I'll get round to it. I hadn't heard. I'll be curious to hear what they say. I just think they're trying to tick off too many issues in one plot line.
Mm.
But we're going to finish up with, you've got another electronic mail of some sort.
Yes.
A missive.
Royford, I do. It was from Drew Hamilton. Can you remind me on which forum this appeared? Because you sent a screenshot to me.
Yes, I think this is the Flick app. So big up to the Flick app post. Cool. Which Drew from Hamilton over there in Tokyo is probably the most prolific poster. Him along with Stephen Bowden.
Ah, I enjoyed this because he starts off by quoting me being sarcastic. So he quotes me saying, "And we all love a good potato for breakfast," which is what I said last week. And then he goes, "Don't Brits eat potatoes at breakfast?" And then Stephen B. replies to this question, very important question, by saying, "Potatoes have no place in a full English breakfast. Unfortunately, it appears that hash browns are spreading across British menus, driving out fried bread, just as interloping grey squirrels have tried to drive out the lovely native red squirrels. This must be stopped. That said, ham, egg and chips is an acceptable breakfast in England under some limited circumstances." In brackets, "Ham, egg and chips is only acceptable in the covered market in Oxford." Obviously. I'm all with you on the fried bread front there. Thank you. Then Drew says back, "A full English includes disgusting mushrooms. So I don't think that needs to be the final word in acceptable ingredients." I love mushrooms, by the way, as well. So
normally we are here to sort of offer opinions or our points of view, and I'm afraid we're moving into the realm of fact now. The American breakfast is better than the British breakfast. It almost limitlessly better, and especially these days. It's just crisp home fried potatoes or a hash brown you could bounce bullets off, all of the other ingredients picked as you want them, delivered as you want them, always hot, never swimming in grease. I mean, it's untouchable. And I used to be quite patriotic about my full English breakfast until I lived in America for 5 years, and I'm afraid I fully switched.
In your view, the American breakfast differs from the English/British breakfast in that the English/British one is served sometimes cold and swimming in grease and doesn't involve a hash brown.
People will always cite some amazing cafe that's around the corner from them, or it'll be some, you haven't been to Mrs. Miggins in, copyright Blackadder. You haven't been to wherever. We're not talking about, these exceptional places. Like your average greasy spoon, the breakfast is truly dreadful. The meat, you can always taste the torture that's gone into producing it. The tea is only good when you're in your 20s and you needed the two or three spoons of sugar to sort of help you get over a hangover. But an American breakfast, you get a bowl of fruit, you get what else do you get, Royfield?
A bowl of fruit.
Yeah, lovely bowl of fruit.
We're not interested in that.
Limitless coffee.
We're talking about fried breakfasts here.
You can have
coffee can be totally overstewed, the limitless coffee, because it's always on the boil. What one thing I would say,
I bet they don't have
American
sausages.
They do breakfast sausage.
The whole what is there for choices for an American breakfast is just about every food group. and every kind of ingredient. That's one big difference. And they really do like their sweet. They do it on the pancake next to the bacon, and then it's covered
maple
in syrup.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which at first you go, oh, you can't do that. Then you chow into it and you go, oh, bloody hell. You know, God bless America. Mm. You know, I am a little bit of a little Englander when it comes to my brekkie, and give me a greasy spoon. All the things that Peter says he doesn't like, I'm like nostalgic for home.
Yeah,
but, you know,
Royfield, look at it from my point of view. I love Britain. This is not a criticism of Britain, just the breakfasts. But I am brokenhearted to have lost my beloved California, the glorious town, the city of Oakland, which is my home. And so
you haven't lost it, Peter. You know where it is.
I know where it is, but I can't.
It's in your heart, Peter.
It's in my heart forever. But, you know, the least you could have done is just pretend to have fallen in love with, you know, your new home the same way that I did.
There's no pretense.
Peter, I've got lots of big love for the Bay Area in California as well, you know. However, I would actually say that Californians in particular have a slightly elevated view of the culinary delights of this place. That's not to say that the average Californian
you're 100% right, yeah.
They go on about how wonderful their food is here.
I don't want to sit at a meal and only talk about the food that's in front of me. The food is a context at which you talk, right?
Mm, it's a bonus
there you go.
As to why you're there.
There you go. They go on and on about how great their food is here. And no, the truth of the matter is, it is 2 degrees better than the UK. But the actual, the amount of choices that you have in terms of cuisines here is much less than the UK. They actually have, in terms of the broadness of their eating palate here, it's actually less. However, the actual quality of the food they eat is actually better. But my God, do they go on about it here. And it does become tedious. And I agree with Peter. You know, you go round to someone's house for dinner, or you go out for dinner, you don't talk about the food, right, to the way that they do. It's just, that's just an aid for you to get round and commune with people, but they drone on. However, I love the place, but they bloody hell fire. Anyway, give me a greasy spoon, a builder's mug of tea where you can stand up that spoon in it, and I'm well happy.
And a fried slice instead of a hash brown.
So, and brown sauce. There's no brown sauce over here.
Black pudding?
You know what? I came very late to the black pudding game, being West Indian and all. We don't eat that. And I thought, oh, God, no. Yeah. Smashing. Well, you can also now enjoy the last 7 days social media action with our Sue.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, lovely people. It's Sue here, Queen of Tart, with the social media roundup. It's been a bit of a difficult week, hasn't it? I think we can all agree on that. We've got all sorts of split opinions on Alice. Some people think she's a scared little girl. She's justified in panicking. Our Sandra said that. Lorelei said it's time to put your big girl pants on. And other people are saying, though there's lots of research, it hasn't been realistic for them. And some people think that they've not shown the full horror of their experiences. It just shows that you can't please all the people all the time and everybody has it differently. I'm in a huge agreement with Catherine, who said Chris needs someone to talk to. And there's a lot of worry about what's going to happen with the family. What's Brian going to say when Alice tells him she can never have another drink? That's going to be an interesting day. On a lighter note, we've now got a description of how to avoid spoilers in your field. Gail Robinson goes the full thing, and I've pinned it up to the top of the feed in the Dumpty Dum Facebook post. So hopefully that will make it easier for people to work out what to do next. I still, like everybody else on a Friday night, think I really, really wish that I could just work out what was going on and where my thing's gone. It's all a question of when you listen. Do you listen? And how many times do you listen? Do you listen at 7 o'clock? Do you listen at 2 o'clock the next day? Is it on BBC Sounds? Is it on podcast? Are you there for the minibus edition? There are still lots of us on a Friday night sitting thinking, oh, 7 o'clock, and it never happens. Is this ever going to leave us until we get our Friday nights back? I think probably not. Charles Aptker sent us a really lovely post about a new apple variety that's been discovered by a Wiltshire runner. Can you imagine how much joy Joe would have got out of that? The prospect of another apple ready to make cider from and have something else to go with his tumble tussock. I really miss the cider club. I really miss the days when there was so much lovely fluff. Talking of fluff, we've got Eddie's metal detector. Generally, it seemed to be that you all thought that he was going to either find a load of old tat or absolutely nothing or possibly Stefan's body. We will still always have Stefan's body to look back to. Mia wants him to find some integrity and Glyn would like him to find a conscience. I think we're all going to be waiting an awful long time for that. Some really, really loved David's Truth or Dare rehearsal story and some people really, really, really didn't. Fiona, she has no patience for daft games. Her mother used to say, acting is simple, get on, say the words, get off. I like that very much. Darcy adores David, whereas Karen thinks that David would, if he could have one interesting thing to say about himself, that would be his lie. And Joanne said she spent the whole scene thinking, if he doesn't want to be there, why on earth did he volunteer in the first place? So I think we need some levity. I think we need some lightness. And we had a lovely post, a lovely snaps post from Witherspoon, looking at what nice things had happened during the last week or so. And Yokel Bear got given some UFO and dino socks by his work colleagues. I was extremely envious of those. Sarah Evans saved a sparrow. My lace knitting's going very well, although my wool is stuck somewhere in Felixstowe with 11,000 containers of PPE. Sharon got to have time with a puppy. Oh, so gorgeous. Sue got to see people over Zoom for the first time in 57 years. I do hope you'll have another one soon.
I think what we can learn from this week, what we can learn from looking at Alice and Chris and looking at the world around us, is we've got to take every day as a new day and just get on with it. And I hope that you all stay safe and well and happy. Sandra will be with you next week, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you for that, Sue. You know what, Sue? We need a bee corner for early 2021. So don't forget, let's know what's happening in the hive. Peter.
Yes.
Last week, we didn't have Tweets of the Week.
Well, we did, but it was probably better. Good that it didn't go out, because you two were very disapproving of my offerings.
Disapproving. The first one, I just couldn't possibly laugh. The second one and the third one, I laughed a little bit, but they did get lost.
Yeah. There was a technical hitch, listener, last week, and actually the back end of last week's show didn't actually record. And when you heard the quality of the Tweets of the Week, it's probably a blessing. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, Peter, redeem yourself, sir. Redeem yourself.
No pressure.
But we're going to start with, as always, bronze, silver, gold, in the traditional order. So in bronze, there's Charlie Notton. That's at 19, the numerals, C-E-N. And Charlie says, I wouldn't say David Archer was one-dimensional. I'd say he was the single most boring person ever to have issued forth upon the grey fields of tedium set upon rampant monotony. But that's just me.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I think after last week's experience, I might have lent into what's going to make Kerry laugh a bit more. Anyway.
Thanks.
So there you go. There's that one. And in silver position, we've got Angelica Zipperly, and that's at Zip with two P's, 2005. Angelica says, oh, look, another arsehole bloke in the Archers, Roman.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, OK, we're back to form. This is
why
fine.
Did she think arsehole? Is that supposed to be funny? Why does she think he's an arsehole?
Well, I mean, I kind of thought he was. I mean, I think he's kind of like, I think he's another Lee. I think he's just a bit too kind of smarmy and lovey-dovey and, you know, I mean, anyway. Okay, well, this is fine. One for one at the moment. Let's see if I can, all I need is two from three. That's all I need. Okay. So here we are.
The other one was better. Switch him round.
It's too late, Kerry. There has to be some kind of, you know, rules to all of this stuff.
Sorry.
So here we are. God, this is because there's a lot of tension now, isn't there? What's going to happen? Gold position, Helen Walmsley J, at the Vintage Year. And David never really gets on with pigs, along with almost every other living organism and some dead ones.
Yes, because it's spot on, isn't it?
So, yeah.
Very good. I laughed my head off at two ones that are awful about David.
So, yeah, just bash David and you get an instant guffaw from Kerry.
And silence from Royfield for all three. Mark you.
Royfield?
No, well, I just thought Kerry summed up my feelings to all of those tweets, and she was very expressive. So
how about
I just
earlier
thought...
when she called me insincere and immodest?
As I said, generally I line up behind Auntie Kerry in most things. So, Right, folks, we're drawing proceedings to a close. It's been a Monday, so we've recorded a dum-de-dum. You'll probably get this on a Tuesday. Well, you will, because I can't edit it in time because of the time difference. So it's a Tuesday for you, or a Wednesday, or possibly even a Thursday. You might even be listening to this on a Friday. Who knows? But anyway, folks, what you can do whenever you're listening to this is go on to dum-de-dum.com, because you can register. Things are starting to kick off again back there on dumdum.com. Most important thing is to get yourself ready for the post-pandemic world. And you're saying, what? Beg your pardon? What's I got to do dum-de-dum? It's because that's the whole point of Tractor. You're forgetting. It was for you to pin yourself to the map of the world. And then you could see which other dum-de-dummers were close by. And then through the wondrous magic, the technical bits of code which Jesse has written, you can then magically message that person who's close to you and say, oh, bloody hell, they're also in Catford. And then in the post-COVID world, we're out of our bubbles, you can then basically send a message and say, you like the Archers, you like Dum-de-Dum, your favourite character is Linda or
Kenton or whoever. And why don't we meet and talk about the Archers and Peter and Kerry over a cuppa? Maybe you can have a full English to keep things, you know, properly with the podcast. So that's what you can do on dumdum.com. If you have a profile, go on, dust it off. Said, as I said earlier on, we've noticed because what the map is doing is auto-filling from where you say that you are. So if you say you're in Norwich without saying UK, it's actually pinning you in Norwich in Connecticut, Sally Hodgson. So go on, dust off your profile, put the country that you're also in as well. And in the post-COVID world, which is just around the corner, we can get tractoring. We can get having informal meetups. Patreon.com. Go there, $2 per show. So anyway, so that's patreon.com. And thank you to everybody who does donate, not only on Patreon, but also on PayPal.
Yes. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message. Or you can text your message to us by starting your message with DUMB to 077-862-00690.
On Twitter, you can find us where we are at DUMBDDUMB. I can be found at Royfield, that's R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D.
I'm at Kerry Warbis, which is K-E-R-I-W-A-R-B-I-S.
Pete Fickling of Feedback fame. How can you be found?
At Pete Fickling.
Smashing. That's simple. Facebook, you can go on to Facebook. And if you're a member of our Facebook group, you will see the invite for Friday's 4 p.m. UK time, which is rather early for us in North America. But that's the only time that Jackie Smith, 4:30 p.m. That's the only time that Jackie could actually do the Zoom. You'll see the invite. You know what? Go tell your friends. If you're into Strictly, I think we'd safely call this a Archers Dumb-de-dumb Strictly mashup. I'm presuming there's going to be quite a few questions about her time on Strictly and how it all works and Dancing with Anton. That's that. Facebook, Twitter. Oh, big up to the Flick App posse. I like some Flick App action. Why don't you join me by downloading the Flick app? Quite simply go onto the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, download the Flick app. It's all about sports. Download that, dissuade you. It's the same, said same app. And then you go and find Dumb-de-dumb. That's that. Oh, and also big ups to the people who've been putting the international sign of Dumb-de-dumb on their Twitter profiles. Some people call it the flag in Nepal. I call it the international sign for bunting, and put that next to your name. And then also, it's just a little special call sign, isn't it? It's a little funny handshake, which we're doing on that platform, just to know that you is cool, we is cool, we is family. Right. I suppose I should pay out some Sister Sledge now. That was We Are Family, wasn't it?
It was indeed, it was. Yeah.
Auntie Kerry, would you like to say au revoir to the listeners?
Ah, goodbye, everybody, and see you in a few weeks, because other people are doing next Monday, I think, aren't they?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, we have a surprise pairing, folks. A blast from the past, that's all I'm going to say. Pete Fickling, yep. Your sign-offs are always pretty epic.
Well, have fun, everyone.
But that's me, my mouth running away with me, and I'm not doing that. I'm playing my little mashup mix, which I did last night. Kept me up till all hours. I love me some Bob Marley. Here is my little mix with him singing, jamming over a bed of disco loveliness with a two-step garage beat. I give you Bob Marley. Tacky bye. Clara bit.
I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming, jamming, and I hope you like jamming too. Ain't no rules, ain't no vow, we can do it anyhow. I and I will see you through, 'cause every day we pay the price, we're delivering sacrifice. Jamming till the jam is through, alright, we're jamming. I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming, jamming, and I hope you like jamming too. Ain't no rules, ain't no vow, we can do it anyhow. I and I will see you through, 'cause
every day we pay the price. We're delivered sacrifice. Jump until the jam is through. All right, we're jamming. I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming. We're jamming in the name of the Lord, and we're jamming in the name of the Lord. We're jamming. I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming.